We present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the news quiz. We start with some words from the Evening Standard, read by Diana Speed.
Hundreds of people are seeking help with anger management every day as commuters implode with fury amid the stresses of getting from A to B. The British Association of Anger Management said its website was getting up to 500 hits a day.
Our thanks to Lawrence McNamara for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Mark Steele and Zoe Lyons. And opposite them, on my left, Katie Brand and Michael Deacon. So, Mark, who didn't impress the press?
This will be the story about Donald Trump and his very peculiar press conference. His latest allegations, whether there are allegations, or people going, oh, it's going to finish him, the sort of various liberal people who think, oh, that's got to be the end of it. But it won't be. It just, the whole thing is just too erratic. I'm still shocked from him getting in. I just thought, you know, there's going to be one of these every few months now, one of these nights where you think, oh, no, it'll be all right. And then this year, at some point, there will be a referendum on whether we should all have a red-hot poker up the backside. And all the opinion polls will show that not a single person in the country thinks we should have a red-hot poker up the backside. And on the night of the referendum, at 2 a.m, Dimbleby will be going, well, what a shock. I mean, who could possibly have expected this? It's coming from Worcester. Look at that, 88%. So we all should have a red-hot poker up the backside. What do you make of that, Paddy Ashdown? I'll tell you what I did write down. This is the sort of rambling nonsense. I know I'm in no place to throw particular stones in that glass house, but this is one bit that he said, asked about who's going to pay for the wall then, his famous Mexican wall. Mexico, in some form, and there are many different forms, will reimburse us, whether it's a payment, probably less likely that it's a payment. This is the only possible solution, I think, is that while he's building his wall along the border with Mexico, we get the Canadians to sneakily build another wall on their border, then we all chip in to build a roof and lock the bastards in.
So what are the different allegations that were in this dossier that perhaps shouldn't have been released?
But it's been suggested that he paid Russian prostitutes to urinate on a bed that Obama had slept in the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow. And his answer to that was, it's a total lie, it's total false news, it's a complete lie, and anyway, I'm a germaphobe, which I think a lot of his supporters will misunderstand and will now boycott Bratwurst and Lederhosen. Yeah.
Do you know what he said in an interview in 2015? He said he was not a germaphobe. Okay, so recent experience has changed him, clearly.
They did say, didn't they, the strongest critic of Donald Trump is Donald Trump 2 years ago, if you just look back at his Twitter timeline. But the thing about all the prostitutes and the urinating on the bed, it's sort of quite fun, isn't it? It's a sort of fun, salacious, tabloidy thing. And then when you
read... sort of hazy smokescreen.
Yeah, when you read other bits of it, there's kind of all these more sinister things about how, you know, the Russians wanted him to downplay NATO and make sure that people weren't so bothered about Crimea and Ukraine. And when you look back at the exact timeline of when all of these things were supposed to have happened, you see that that's exactly when he started saying these sorts of things. So it is really sinister. I like a sort of prostitute weeing on the bed story as much as the next man, but there's some really genuinely sinister stuff going on.
I thought the most unnerving moment of that press conference was when he was saying that actually it's fine, he's very, very wary about spying. He always tells his people to be careful what they get up to in hotel rooms because there are bound to be little hidden cameras filming everything they do and that'll end up on TV. And I found that quite worrying, coming from a TV executive who owns lots of hotels. You know, people, you know, they talk about Donald Trump as if he's some kind of idiot, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But actually, you know, the guy does his homework. I mean, this is a tweet he sent in the year 2014. He said, "Are you allowed to impeach a president for gross incompetence?" So, I mean, even at that early stage, he was preparing for the next 4 years.
mean, his press conferences, in stark contrast to the Obama's final speeches as they leave the White House, you know, Barack Obama's and Michelle Obama's, which I found particularly moving because she's a very elegant, eloquent woman, and her speech was very, very moving indeed. I mean, obviously it'll be an awful lot better when Melania does it eventually.
Didn't he end the press conference with his old TV slogan?
Yeah, you're fired.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
You're fired. Yeah. It's like, really, we are just living in a reality TV show that we can't turn off.
He was cross with CNN. He called them fake news. You're fake news. Even the BBC, he said, oh, yeah, the BBC, that's another beauty. You know, I mean, I hope he means that genuinely, actually. You know, it's sarcasm, Donald. You're being very unfair. On this programme, we have been nothing but supportive. you should hear what they say on the news. Relievingly, this is the extraordinary press conference Donald Trump held this week, during which he was forced to deny unverified claims that, amongst other things, he'd watched Russian prostitutes urinate onto a bed. I mean, all this may well be untrue, but it's like believing in fairies or Father Christmas or that David Cameron put his willy in a dead pig's mouth. We want to believe these things are true because they make the world a brighter and happier place. As always, Trump appeared on stage with his entire family. It's like the Nolans, only less sinister. Either way, they both get me in the mood for dancing. To avoid any conflict of interest when he becomes president, Donald Trump said he has signed over total control of his businesses to the privileged and amoral products of his flabby, pathetic loins. he might not have used that exact term, but... 2 points to Mark. Zoe, what did Simon say about a cash injection?
This is Simon Stevens, the chief executive of NHS England, who has claimed that the money that Theresa May has given to the NHS isn't exactly as much as the government has claimed it's been. He said it's stretching a point to suggest that the government is giving them more money than they actually need. What has happened in real terms is the money given to the NHS is going down slowly over the years, and this has been highlighted in the news recently with the crisis within the NHS. Of course, you can't have a crisis within the NHS without Jeremy Hunt popping up. He's got a strange expression on his face, hasn't he, Jeremy Hunt? He never looks like he's fully focused at what's in front of him. He's got that far-off look in his eye, like a horse taking a really long wee. Weirdly, though, this week, Jeremy Hunt actually urged sick Brits not to go to A&E, which I suppose is one way of dealing with the problem, isn't it? If you just encourage healthy Brits to go to A&E, you're going to deal with them and process them a lot more quickly, aren't you? And not have to worry about hitting the targets that they're not currently doing. He mentioned this week that he was going to perhaps shift the targets a little bit. There's a target currently in place with the NHS that people have to be seen within 4 hours in an emergency situation. Fair enough. I mean, I take a similar view to target. On the 1st of January, I said, Zoe, we are going to do dry January. And then on the 2nd of January, I had changed that target to, Zoe, we are going to do dry 1st of January. And then call it a day. And I'm very happy to report that I had hit that target and have been merrily drunk ever since. So
it's 4 hours, the target. That's a target.
The target for everyone, but 95% of patients in A&E should be seen within 4 hours.
I think the pledge is still 4 hours. It's just that, you know, originally it was we will see the patients in A&E within 4 hours, and now we will see the patients within 4 hours of their death. So it's near enough. Near enough the same thing.
Didn't Jeremy Hunt take his own children to A&E in a non-emergency? And when he was asked about it, he just went, well, the GP was closed. Yes, Jeremy. Sort of the point. Sort of your job.
So what was the busiest day then for hospitals? There's no points for this.
New Year's Eve?
No. 364 day other days for you. The 27th of December was the busiest day. You get more and more people after Christmas, more and more people go to... I mean, the worse the NHS gets, the more people seem to want to use it. I mean, that's this thing like when people used to sort of read Dan Brown books and whatever. They go, that thing, apparently, it's dreadful. I'm going to read it and just see how dreadful it is. It's having the same effect on people.
You see, but the 27th of December is 2 days after Christmas. That's when most family members have really had enough of each other and probably go into the kitchen and just lop a finger off. Yeah.
Cretaceously, this is the apparent crisis in the National Health Service, which led to NHS England Chief Executive Simon Stevens criticising Theresa May and administering a select committee slapdown, one of the World Wrestling Federation's least appealing pay-per-view events. Stevens annoyed the select committee by refusing to give them any information until they'd waited for 7 hours in a room containing nothing but a vending machine full of Lipton's iced tea and a child with a raisin up their nose. The Red Cross have been assisting the NHS and describe the situation as a humanitarian crisis. Theresa May attacked their claims as irresponsible and overblown, and once she's done enhancing her popularity by tackling the Red Cross, she intends to take down other social menaces, such as the Women's Institute, the RNLI and the Dogs Trust. It's nice of the Red Cross to bring their years of experience to the aid of the NHS, although one surgeon said that a metal canister coming through the roof full of condensed milk and corned beef did cause something of a distraction during an otherwise uneventful colonoscopy. 2 points to Zoe. Katie, who's had a failure to relaunch?
Well, this is Jeremy Corbyn. And we heard all through December, didn't we, that there was going to be this relaunch of Jeremy Corbyn. It was going to be Let Corbyn Be Corbyn. He was going to be sold to the public as a populist leader, a left-wing populist leader, which is great, except obviously if you're going to be populist, you do need to be popular. You don't have to be right, you just need to be popular. And that's been a bit of a problem for him. It all happened the other day where he went on the radio to give his sort of relaunch interview and just spaffed a load of stuff that was in his head and then retracted it all later in the day, and that was the relaunch. So it's sort of, are we going to have to now have a relaunch of the relaunch? It's like sort of if NASA has a rocket, you know, and they count down to launch it and it just sort of fizzes and falls over. They don't just sort of push it back up again. See, let's give this one another go. I guess they get another rocket. So I don't know. But he was talking about the maximum income cap when, in a kind of manner which implied he was making it up as he went along. He was then pressed as to what the maximum income should be, and he said it sort of, broadly speaking, should be a little bit higher than what he's on. I have to say, when I try to impose discipline about, like, eating crisps, I do the same thing. I think the maximum number of crisps I should eat, the maximum crisp cap, should be slightly above what I would like to eat. So I do sympathise. But my theory with Jeremy Corbyn is that he doesn't know he's the leader of the Labour Party, which explains why he's in such a bad mood all the time. And he won't talk to the media, and he doesn't understand why they all want comment all the time. And that when the Tories announce some huge policy and then there's radio silence from Jeremy Corbyn because he's making jam, it's because he doesn't know. But I feel I am one of the disenfranchised centre now. We've got a government that's too right-wing for me to vote for and an opposition that's too left-wing for me to vote for. And I feel like I'm this sort of millions of people, the disenfranchised centre. They've managed to alienate millions of us who are quite centre. So and I literally have no idea who to vote for.
But who, you must have a dream person. There must be someone that you think, actually, that's the person that really speaks to me, be it Hilary Benn or Jacob Rees-Mogg. Well, I think are increasingly... Yeah. Increasingly interchangeable.
Yeah, I mean, Simon Groom from Blue Peter.
What platform is he standing on? Let's all be nicer to dogs.
Yeah. At this point, I'd be happy with that, to be honest.
Does it matter what he says, though? Because then the way it gets reported, the press will just go, now Corbyn Laden says he'll force your pets to be Muslim or something. Or Corbyn to abolish the Navy and replace it with a salad or whatever. Now Corbyn to introduce women-only gravity. Men will be forced to float, says Labour leader.
Are you complaining about fake news, Mr Trump?
And Michael, were you at any of these relaunch events?
I was, yeah. It was for months he's been saying he will defend freedom of movement in the EU. And then the night before, his people told all the papers he's going to say he doesn't want freedom of movement anymore. And then the morning after that he was interviewed, he basically slapped himself down, distanced himself from his own speech, and said, no, I didn't. That's not what I mean. I'm still in favour of free movement. And then we actually got to the speech, and this is what he said, word for word this: Labour is not wedded to freedom of movement as a point of principle, but I don't want that to be misinterpreted, nor do we rule it out. And the thing is, I mean, Mark, you were talking about, you know, the media misreporting him. That is word for word what he said, and he was not mangling his words. He wasn't just making this up at the top of his head.
This proves my point, that he doesn't know he's leader of the Labour Party. So he gets presented with statements by this mysterious figure called Jeremy Corbyn, and he has to read them and decide whether he agrees with them or not. Maybe what he needs is a story to come out that he paid prostitutes to urinate on Tony Blair's bed.
In a Premier Inn in Hull.
Yeah. His popularity.
But wouldn't all the others do even worse? That's the thing. However badly, if it was Yvette Cooper or someone like that, Ed Balls maybe now on the sort of dancing with that legacy.
Surely you can't win a party leadership on a dancing ticket.
Well, I think at the moment, that's possible.
Timorously, this is the exciting relaunch of Leader of the Opposition, Jeremy Corbyn. Yes, he's back, and this time it's confusing. The reboot left Labour insiders wishing they'd relaunch Corbyn the traditional way by smashing a bottle of champagne against his hull and waving a white hanky tearfully as he floats away into the Atlantic. According to the Labour leader's office, Corbyn will now be shooting from the hip, straight into a concrete pillar and ricocheting back into his own face. Corbyn suggested that bosses should be paid no more than 20 times their lowest paid worker. The rule would only apply to companies who hold contracts to work for the government. Although, frankly, if we're going to start penalising the CEOs of companies like Atos, G4S and Capita, then I think this country has simply forgotten how to reward success. 2 points to Katie. And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Zoe have 4, and so too to Katie and Michael. We start round two with an advert in the pet section of the Sheerness Times and Guardian.
6 foot boa constrictor. Free to good home. Very friendly. Good eater. Likes children.
Thanks to Carl Heller and Lizzie Jane for sending us that. Michael, who's made a hash of cash for ash?
This would be Martin McGuinness. There's a huge crisis in Northern Irish politics. People are worried that maybe peace is at risk, potentially, because Martin McGuinness of Sinn Féin has resigned from the power-sharing executive after a big row they've had with the DUP over cash for ash, this green energy scandal. Basically, the government in Northern Ireland was trying to encourage people to use this more renewable energy. They were basically paying them to use these biomass boilers, I think they were, and if you installed one of these things, for every pound you spent on it, the government would pay you £1.60. But I gather that the idea wasn't very well thought through because people realised there was actually no cap to the amount that you could receive from the government on this. And so you'd get people just installing them just for making money out of it. And apparently there was a farmer who installed one in a barn that was completely empty, and he was just heating it day in and day out, and he stands to make up to about £1 million, I believe, from an empty barn. So that's going well. That's it. And he's not the only one raking it in from it, because apparently one of his cows has been advertising the barn as a sauna. And, you know, animals are flocking to it. They do udder massages. They do hoof exfoliation. Absolutely raking it in. Loads of celebrities have been there. Gwyneth Paltrow's a big fan. She's seen it.
Has anyone else seen this then? Who else has stepped aside then? Or who's he been asking to step aside?
Trying to get them all to resign, presumably, and there'll be another election, isn't that right?
That's right, yeah. The leader, Arlene Foster, he says it's her fault because she was the energy minister? I mean, I've written it down somewhere to avoid these sorts of incidents.
She's the other First Minister, isn't she?
Yeah, well, she's
the First Minister.
She's the first First Minister.
He's the Deputy First.
Well, no, he's just the Deputy Minister, isn't he?
Yes.
I should have written all of this down.
Yeah. It's very confusing, though, isn't it?
Wouldn't it be brilliant if the news was like this? Yeah. And today in Northern Ireland, someone... What's his name? What do you call that chap? The other one. He used to be in the IRA. Have you just hang on just a second? He was the Minister of New Delhi. Anyway, let's go on to the sport. Well, Manchester, was it one of the Manchesters, beat someone at cricket, football, who don't know. Anyway, now over to the weather. Well, it's going to be either hot or dark or something. That's all from us. We'll be back at 9 for an update.
Point made. did you see this story, Zoe?
Yes. Martin McGuinness wants Arlene Foster to go because she's First Minister of Northern Ireland, and she was in charge of this initiative when it first came out, the RHI. Which
That's
is
right, the Renewable Heat Incentive.
But when I first heard it, when I first heard about the RHI in Northern Ireland, I wasn't sure whether there was another party that I wasn't aware of already. I was like, who are the RHI?
We're the real RHA. We've fled from the continent. You're the RHA.
It is incredible, though, given the, you know, the history of Northern Ireland and all of the troubles that, you know, through it all, the marches, all of those things that happened over all of those years, the things that should, at the end, be the end of shared power of wood pellets. It's just, just seems so quaint, really, doesn't it? Let's be honest. If you knew you could make £1 million over 20 years just leaving the radiators on... Who wouldn't? I would. I haven't got a pension.
Has this not brought unity between the two communities, though? Surely they must be able to agree on this. You know, that's our part, the radiators on. I forget about our other legend.
Tops off, everybody relax. I suppose that solves a lot of problems, doesn't it, sometimes? Decimally, this is the story of the Cash for Ash scandal in Northern Ireland, where a mistake over incentives for renewable energy has prompted the resignation of Deputy First Minister Martin McGuinness. Northern Ireland is governed through an agreement where the DUP and Sinn Féin share power, like the Conservatives and the Lib Dems did, except they share power. For every pound that farmers spent on renewable fuel, they received up to £1.60 in subsidies. This led to farmers needlessly heating agricultural outbuildings for their own financial gain. Concerns first arose when a farmer in Antrim was spotted turning the doorknob to his cowshed while wearing oven gloves. At least this will bring a bit of variety to those delightful murals. Guns, balaclava, lovely warm barn. 2 points to Michael. Zoe, have a listen to this. Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, where the banshees live and they do live well. Stonehenge, where a man is a man and the children dance. Zoe, who's had a tunnel vision?
This is the news. This is the news that the government have finalised plans to build a tunnel near Stonehenge, expanding the A303, which is a main road, but has become very, very busy with more traffic upon it. And certain sectors are happy about the news. The National Trust and the English Heritage, who I think look after Stonehenge, I don't know, do the hoovering and dust around it, I'm sure, are in favour of the tunnel, as long as it's long enough to sort of not damage the area around Stonehenge. But others are up in arms because it is an area of huge historic importance, a Neolithic importance. I mean, I'm no historian myself. And I just wonder why they had to build Stonehenge so close to the A303 in the first place. The sad thing is, if they do build a tunnel near Stonehenge, then kids of many generations will miss out on that moment that you never forget the first time you see Stonehenge, you drive past it and everybody in the car goes, oh, it's a lot smaller than I thought it was going to be. People have the same reaction to seeing Stonehenge as they do, I would imagine, to meeting Tom Cruise for the first time. I mean, this is just an ongoing issue with increased volume of traffic on our roads in the United Kingdom, you know, and the sort of failing infrastructure that we have. You know, it's the same with the railway system that is buckling as well at the moment.
Perhaps we should build a new railway under the current railway.
Possibly.
Just tunnel underneath it. If you live to Brighton to London, they should build a new railway that goes under the existing Southern Rail one.
Do you know what? Right now, Miles, that makes more sense than anything else that is being offered up as a solution to this ongoing situation. I live in Brighton, so I consider myself a Southern Rail survivor. And we're recording this in January. I had to set off in Easter just to make sure that I could get here on time.
I think it should be one of these sort of like 1950s films set around Southern Rail with David Niven and Alec Guinness, and one proposes to the other. I wish, sir, to propose a bet. We shall both set off for London Victoria. I shall begin in the hills of Nepal, where you can begin on the concourse at Brighton Station. I may travel by whichever mode of transport takes me across land, and you must get the Southern Railway, which will see who gets there first. And you see Alec Guinness on a yak in Nepal and that. And poor David Niven stuck having to live for a couple of weeks in Red Hill because there's been a signal failure and stuff.
It would ruin other classic films like A Brief Encounter. Yeah. They just spend their lives together. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I appear to have forgotten who I was married to in the first place.
The railway children would just become the railway middle-aged people.
Insipidly, this is the news that a plan to dig a tunnel under Stonehenge has been approved by Chris Grayling, the Druid of State for Transport. Experts predict the rumbling of lorries beneath the henge will cause the stones to vibrate, finally sending a signal to our alien overlords that we're here and ready to die. I like to think that in thousands of years' time, our descendants will travel down the A303 to the remains of a welcome break and have no idea what it can possibly have been used for. No one can be sure what the point of Stonehenge is, but it's thought that prehistoric Britons might have constructed it as some kind of bell-end magnet. Two points to Zoe. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Mark?
This is certainly by Mark Hudson from Welling Garden Cities. Five Live interview with Lewis Hamilton after the Japanese Grand Prix. The interviewer said, "Lewis, we could see the damp patch on the starting grid. How nervous were you?"
Zoe?
This has been sent in by Tom Godwin from Cardiff, and he heard this on a train announcement on a Swansea to Paddington First Grace Western train. Apparently the guard came on the tannoy and said, "We apologise to passengers intending to leave the train at Slough this evening. We've just passed Slough."
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Katie and Michael have 8, but this week's winners are Mark and Zoe with 9. Before we leave you, here is an announcement spotted in the annual report of the Harpenden RSPB, sent in by John Allen.
"Our accounts have been independently examined this year by Maureen Lamburn following John Thornton's retirement, for which we are most grateful."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Zoe Lyons, Katie Brand and Michael Deacon. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script was written by James Kettle, Benjamin Partridge and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Catherine Bohart and Jenny Laville. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.